Welcome back to Beyond Packaging, where we break down all the forces shaping packaging and everything in between. I'm Laura Foti.
Matthew Wright, still the co-host.
Still the co-host. Matthew, I haven't seen you recently. You've been on the road.
Yeah, I was all over the country, heading back out again for another road tour. But yeah, I think last trip was in New York. It was a great trip.
You were speaking on a panel, I think, right?
Yeah, it was the last day of the MD&N event. Cole from Packaging Dive was the moderator, and there was a panel talking about a topic that a lot of people are still talking about, which is tariffs and the impact that it's having on businesses. And it was a full crowd, which I was surprised for the last day of the event.
Were there any kind of major takeaways from the panel that you walked away with from other panelists?
Yeah, no, I think the thematic questions that came out of all the questions, we have a great question and answer session, was, do I move my supplier or do I leave it? I mean, that was really kind of, if you boil most of the questions down, were that, or how do I think through that was really the topic. And so really interesting, the other co-panelists, really insightful people, have been in the space, do a lot of business with companies doing business in China. And the overall response or answer to the question was, leave it now, because you don't know what's it's tethered to, meaning, as I always talk about, there's multi-layered supply chain relationships. Make sure you vet very well before you move it and have a really good plan to do that and try to keep your existing vendor still engaged.
Yeah, absolutely. Easy to say, hard to do.
Yeah.
I know a lot of our customers who are using SpecRite they have that visibility, but many people don't have that visibility.
Yeah, I talked about that, about having that ability to slice and dice product, you know, down to the level of origin and then do the what if scenarios. You know, what if I do move this? What's the overall impact? Is it a big enough impact to move the needle to take the risk of doing that? And then ultimately, we talked a lot about kind of the time to build capacity in this country, whether it was regulatory, you know, environmental, legislature, whatever it is, you know, really having a clear read of how long it takes to get capacity built.
Absolutely. Well, that's certainly a news item we're going to be tracking, but there's a lot going on. We don't have a guest today, but there's a lot of breaking news. One of the first one out of Packaging World is that Pepsi has pushed back some of their sustainable packaging goals. And Matthew, I know you and I have talked a lot about this. You know, we're intimately familiar with how hard it is to do this. So PepsiCo has significantly scaled back its targets for virgin plastic reduction and increased recycled content usage. They've abandoned the target of cutting virgin plastic from non-renewable sources by 50% by 2030. The company instead says it's focusing on reducing total tonnage of virgin plastics. Matthew, like break this down for us. What does this mean?
Yeah, I think it's what we all know. You know, Pepsi, in giving them fairness, you know, went out early with some pretty aggressive indicators of what they wanted to accomplish. I also always think, you know, when leadership sets a tone, you know, or says something, it sets a tone, right? So I think the good intent of the messaging or goals they had set previously was being one of the first to kind of put something out there. Sometimes when you're the first, it's a little hard, damaging. Secondarily, set the tone for the Pepsi organization to kind of how they're going to feel about things. But I think as they got into data, as they got into what the reality of source of supply of alternative products, what they got in terms of actually how much tonnage they're probably using. Again, I talk about this missing data or lack of data. I think once they really started to get their arms around the data and understand how big of a task this is, what's available out there, you know, they probably have to reset to more of a meaningful outcome versus a philosophical outcome.
Yeah, absolutely. I think another challenge that they mentioned here is that there are restrictions in countries on what you can actually use. And so, for example, they said our PET beverage packaging was only approved in India in 2023 and approved for food this year. Additionally, China doesn't allow our PET in food grade packaging. So to your point, you can make goals, but the reality on the ground of, can you source these types of materials or are they approved in different countries? You know, if you're Pepsi, your scale is so... Yeah. It's so global that there's a lot of nuance.
Well, and just the supply chain itself is so challenging. I mean, if you're going to now go down to different products for every country, you know, obviously you have the graphics, the labeling, the languages anyway. Now you're going to go into a material change by everything. Your efficiencies start to drop tremendously, right? And a lot of what we consume today is at the price it is because it's highly efficient. This starts to really challenge the business model. And so the complexity for big companies like Pepsi and others is, you now have to look at what works for as many as you can. Mm. And so to your point, it's sources of supply, it's what countries will allow. What's that combination that gets you as far as you can from commonality against all your products?
Yeah, I mean, given how difficult this is to balance, Matthew, how should people thinking about setting new goals successfully do it? I mean, because it seems like, to your point, you don't want to actually create more complexity in your supply chain.
Yeah, I think you have to really understand who you are as a company first, right? What are you really trying to accomplish? You know, set the tones around that. You have this huge regulatory element I know we're going to talk about in a minute coming in that you're going to have to address. I think at the end of the day, you know, and you see a little bit of what they said in the last statement you just made, is less is better.
Yeah.
So just less is better, but you want to sell more product. So how do you do that? And so I think that's the key, is how do you actually reduce any sort of materials going into the world? And, you know, one industry has done that well, but still has a lot of room to grow, I'm sure, is bottled water, right? You see cans now, you'll see very lightweight plastic materials. That's been done from a force of price pressure over years. Now it's a sustainability issue, but the same kind of theme can go from everybody. Is how do we get something just to the consumer, looks fine, they consume it, and it's as little as possible, and then let's find the best way to make that recyclable.
Absolutely. You know, good segue into our next story. You talked about importance of brands staying true to themselves. Lipton just came out with their first brand update in more than a decade. I actually had some tea last night and I was thinking about them. I think this is really done well, because most brand refreshes that I see depart so far from the original brand. And this one, like, you kind of wouldn't, it's like a touch up. It's, you know, on the left, they have more claims, but on the right, you have a leaf. They actually added a tea bag. It instead of a pitcher, it's a glass and a mug. It feels nice.
Well, two things. One is, you sent me a video, I guess we're not playing on the clip here today, it was really funny about tea, and we'll leave it at that. The second piece is there's been some recent rebrand refreshes that haven't, I think, gone as well. I agree with you 100%. When I looked at this, two things. One is, wasn't confused by why they were doing it. And then secondarily, I knew which one I liked better, and it was the newer one, and it had some solid reasons. And what's interesting, certainly by no means a test, but I took it upon a few friends and just said, which one stands out to you to be the better product today? And they both picked the new version. So I think very well done by them. And for all those reasons, really exciting.
Absolutely. So if you're getting pressure to do a packaging redesign, remember, it doesn't have to be this bold departure from what you're doing.
Yeah. And such a legacy, iconic brand that's still fresh today.
Well, you know, I think there was another update that they did that I think was very interesting. So they've also designed for more vertical merchandising too. So I think historically, mm-hmm. Lipton's been more horizontal. If you look at the tea as a category, a lot of players have gone vertical. And so they've also redesigned some of their primary packs to include a side panel that enables vertical merchandising. Previously, the pack's ample horizontal panel was the default facing. So I think you're seeing them respond to maybe changes in the tea category, but in a way that's authentic to them.
Yeah, I don't know if it was because tea and coffee compete, but I was always wondering when tea is going to be, you know, vertical, because, you know, coffee has been forever from the can, right, to now the vacuum form pouches. And you look at that aisle, and it's confusing, because then you see the change. You said as many have started to go to the more vertical. I think by and large, it's a better appearance anyway, and has better shelf utilization than horizontal.
Yeah, I will say though, I don't think I ever open up vertical tea packages correctly. I'm like, do I go from the side?
Right.
Do I go for the, so if you know, please reach out and tell me which way I should be opening it. Cause I hate when I ruin a package. Cause something like that, you're using it to reclose. Well, and then I have all this tea in my cabinet.
I was gonna say, probably like everybody have 20 different tea boxes and they're all jumbled up depending on how you opened them.
Exactly. This is a really interesting story. So this is from the New York Times. I wouldn't say a lot of packaging news hits the New York Times.
Right.
So this is a fun story. Snack maker Mondelez is suing Aldi grocery chain over look-alike product packaging. So Mondelez, you know, iconic for Chips Ahoy, Oreos, has filed a lawsuit in federal court in Illinois against the U.S. branch of the German supermarket chain, saying that this blatantly copies Mondelez's signature snacks in a way that is quote unquote likely to deceive and confuse customers. What do you think about this?
Well, first of all, hopefully we need to do it in a future segment. We'll tell Matt from the packaging collection at MSU to pull the original generic packaging. I remember as a kid, generic product said generic on it. It was a white box that said generic. So pretty hard to confuse it between the branded product. You know, and so there's two sides of the story. One is I think they're very close. They look very similar to each other. And I think, you know, probably from all these positions, they're trying to do that, but in fairness, to look more relevant to that aisle buy-in decision. But Mondelez has spent through many, many, many years creating just tremendous brand loyalty. I mean, you look at that Oreo packaging, you can take every word off that packaging and know exactly what that product is. And so very powerful brand recognition, and that creates an emotional connection to product. You start to get the flavor, the taste as you start to buy that product. So it's going to be really interesting to see how the courts look at this case.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm not a legal expert other than taking communications law in college, where we did talk about some of these things. But I think what's interesting is, to your point, the color blue for Oreo, putting that on a package, the product is a private label product. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how far you can, make a claim like that, right? Because it's almost become like Kleenex. Like, you don't say, oh, can I have a tissue? You say, can I have a Kleenex? Kleenex is a brand that's so associated with tissues that now we all call it Kleenex. I'm almost wondering if, for some of these iconic snacks, if we've crossed into the realm of this color blue is Oreo, this color red is the, the nut butter, cookie. Like, can you really go, how deep can you defend this, I think will be what's interesting.
Yeah, I think it's, again, not a legal expert by any means, but it's interesting to your first statement about this, that packaging typically doesn't hit the Wall Street Journal, doesn't hit the high courts. So both are going to be interesting to follow. I think both are going to have a very strong position on their opinions on this. But I do go back to, if you can take the words off of something and have an opinion of what it is, it's a pretty strong case for brand identity.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that's probably not helping Aldi's cause, I had sent Matthew a commercial, what was it, from like the 80s?
Yeah.
It's this woman making tea,
right?
And she talks about how her husband's love, I got to put this in the show notes.
Yeah.
She's like, my husband loves tea, I like gin. And then it cuts to Aldi's and it says, like brands, only cheaper. So it must have been private label tea. So, I mean, part of these, Aldi's, they are kind of known for this. So it'll be interesting to see how far the packaging claim will be taken in the courts.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. So you got the second layer, which I don't even know if it'll enter the conversation, is the product, right? If the product ultimately is as good or better at a lower cost, kind of stepping past the brand identity issues, it's probably a challenge, right? And so you got to continue to have that high value product that creates the emotion and opinion when you consume it, that it's really high valued. And then I think people still reach for the right one.
Hopefully. Oh yeah. I mean, I remember one of my favorite memories as a kid growing up, we were in Cape May, New Jersey. And one of our family friends was a packaging engineer, shout out Sean French. And he worked on Oreo packaging. And he had this special edition. It was the first time they were doing resealable. And so, of course, the thing with cookies is when you open it and it gets exposed, they become stale, which no one wants to eat a stale cookie.
No.
And so they came out with this design where you could reseal it and the Oreos would stay fresh for longer. And I remember being at the beach, it's hot, and I'm like eating Oreos and it was just the best.
Yeah. I think conversely, the chip people haven't done that because I like to sell more chips when I throw out all my stale chips. So hopefully that comes to soon there.
But the thing about that too is your private label company is usually not going to invest that much in packaging to not have you have stale Oreos. So I think, there's still things where if you are being disrupted by private label, there's still elements of value add in your packaging that you can do that they wouldn't, because they're just going to compete on price, right?
Yeah, no, it's the whole experience. And experience is about the packaging. I mean, you look at the Apple iPhone, part of the value of buying an iPhone is you get the package, and the package is an experience, right? So I think brands can still separate themselves from the pack by just having a better experience with the packaging.
Absolutely. Well, Matthew, great to be back together again with you. I know you're heading on the road, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Sounds great.
Thanks, everyone. Appreciate it.